The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to Wednesday's show. It's 3 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 28th of July, 2026. Thanks so much for choosing Highland Radio this morning, and hopefully you won't be disappointed. We've got loads coming up for you over the next 2 hours on this programme, keeping you across all the big stories locally and further afield. We've got your comments, of course, and conversations that matter. And we want your input throughout the course of the morning. 086 60 25,000. WhatsApps and texts to that number, whichever you prefer. They all come into the one place, 086 60 25,000. If you want to give us a call as well, we've got Caroline and Shannon, of course, manning the phones. 07491 25,000. And emails, comments at highlandradio.com. If you're listening to the overnight replay or indeed the podcast, which is available for you now on Spotify, by the way, feel free to email or text and we can pick them up and include the comments or suggestions in the next live show, right? Okay, now let's have a look at some of the papers which are out this morning. We'll start with the locals, the Finn Valley Voice. Donegal County Council members have aired their frustration over the slow pace of housing developments in Ballybofey and Stranorlar. There are currently 202 applicants that have Ballybofey Stranorlar as their first preference at last week's meeting of the Lifford Stranorlar Municipal District. Councillor Patrick McGowan said, "I'm disappointed at what's going to be delivered in Ballybofey and Stranorlar. It's always where the greatest need is and we need to concentrate on it. And there are much fewer houses planned for that area than are actually required." On to the Inish Times this morning. Karen Donovan sent to circuit court on serious drug charges. That is the headline on the front of that paper today. Heading on to the Nationals now, and awful scenes down the country particularly, but not exclusively. Storm Chandra. I didn't get the warning on this. I didn't sort of get any urgency or... Now, that just, as I said, I think I said this in conversation with Lee yesterday, I just might not have seen it, but I didn't really get the sense that there was any weather warning out there at all. And that doesn't mean it wasn't out there, do not get me wrong. But I know even here in County Donegal, you know, it was very, very blustery. In fact, some of the highest mean winds were recorded in Mallon or off Mallon. And there was very little talk locally about Storm Chandra. That's how it felt anyway. But parts of the country underwater, absolute devastation. Can you imagine? And many of you actually can imagine because it's a lived experience, the water washing through the ground floor of your home or your business and all the cleanup that would come following that. Well, parts of Ireland will remain on flood alert for further rainfalls expected over the next 72 hours after Storm Chandra battered the country. There was near record flooding on the east coast, which caused millions of euro worth of property damage and left parts of a Wexford town effectively cut off. Gardaí, the fire brigade and council staff and civil defence were deployed to parts of Dublin, Wexford, Wicklow, Waterford and Kilkenny as torrential rainfall resulted in rivers breaking their banks and flood defences being overwhelmed. And also too, it showed Dublin's vulnerability, its transport network, vulnerability to flooding. The M50 snarled up because of flooding and it affected their rail and bus services as well. So a bit of rain, and it was more than a bit of rain, but was enough really to leave the capital in gridlock. The Irish Daily Mail reports that hospitals are hiring diagnostic staff who do not hold qualifications which are recognised by the HSE, i.e. their employer. And this is posing a significant risk to patients. An investigation by the paper has uncovered evidence that qualification requirements are being bypassed despite the HSE's chief people officer repeatedly instructing HR managers to follow them. The Mail has spoken to a range of health sources who said that the hiring practice is widespread and that there are potentially hundreds of clinical measurement, and I'll just go inside here, hundreds of clinical measurement physiologists working without the relevant qualifications. So what are physiologists? Clinical measurement physiologists are healthcare professionals who conduct a range of diagnostic tests on patients in the area of neurology, cardiology, respiratory, GI and vascular. The tests are used to diagnose patients with a particular condition. So that's a very, very important job. And apparently, hospitals are hiring these staff who don't have qualifications recognised by the HSE. Now, I don't know if that means that there is poor diagnostics being done by these people, if it's paperwork and just the qualifications don't necessarily fully match until such time as something's put in place until they do. But I guarantee you right now, and I'm not saying this is the case at Letterkenny University Hospital, but I guarantee you right now there are people listening to this programme who have had misdiagnoses or delayed diagnoses, and maybe it's a condition that wasn't being treated in a timely fashion. Maybe that happens all the time anyway, and it's just part of the cut and thrust of a health service. But that's certainly something, in the absence of further information from the HSE, that will concern people, quite rightly so too. Rightio, it's that time of year whereby we learn where all the politicians are going on their hollybobs for St. Patrick's Day. 40 government reps will be on the march to 52 different countries next month as part of the biggest St. Patrick's Day ministerial merry-go-round in history. The Cabinet, 23 junior ministers, the Ciam Comhairle and the Attorney General will be jetting off to spread the Irish cheer for our national holiday. Who's the designated survivor? Does someone not have to stay back? Well, anyway, some will head to exotic destinations such as Mozambique, Guatemala and Tanzania, although others are going as far as Wales and London. Funny enough, the Wales and London trips are probably the most significant, actually, because you're out there maybe reaching people from Ireland at a very important time for many Irish people. Well, where are our locals going? Junior Minister Charlie McConnell-Ogue, he's going to Thailand and Vietnam, so he's busy. He's going to be going to both. So obviously very important work to be done out there. Marion Harkin, she's a representative for a small part of South Donegal. She's going to France and Morocco. So Marion Harkin, independent, off to France and Morocco. Would I support the government, or any government for that matter, for nice wee trips like that? It'd be tempting too when you're banking 130 grand at the same time. But anyway, Marion Harkin off to France and Morocco. Charlie McConnell-Ogue, he's going to Thailand and Vietnam. I think that's the local interest in those trips, unless I've missed out on someone. Dara O'Brien, of course, has been quite an important name here in Donegal. If you're interested, he's off to Brazil. All right, so that's it. That's where they're going. Let's see now. New rules on rents. Many of you maybe are landlords or interested in this as tenants. It's in the Irish Daily Mirror this morning. Landlords will be expected to self-assess whether rents they set truly reflect market rates under the government's rental reforms. Housing Minister James Brown secured cabinet approval yesterday for a new residential tenancies bill, which will introduce tenancies of minimum duration, establish a rental price register, and restrictions on no-fault evictions. Once enacted, the bill's provisions will come into effect for new tenancies created from March onwards. The law was devised to address investors' long-standing complaints that rent regulations were not attractive. Ministers say the bill will improve rental unit delivery, particularly the chronic shortage of apartments around Dublin, and provide greater security for tenants. And sometimes you do wonder who's actually creating the rules in terms of, you know, the rental sector, land development, tax on major developments, etc. You do wonder sometimes who's really coming up with the with these proposals. On to the Irish Daily Star now, and you will be familiar with, if you've been watching the national news or reading the newspapers, the very tragic death of Grace Lynch. Well, a teenager admits that he was caught red-handed after driving a vehicle causing the death of 16-year-old Grace, a court has been told. 18-year-old Keith Lee of Parkview Drive, Poppintree Park, Dublin 11, appeared yesterday morning before Blanchardstown District Court, charged with dangerous driving causing death at Rathoath Road in Finglas on Sunday. He's accused of driving a vehicle in a manner that caused the death of Grace that day. The offence is contrary to two sections of the Road Traffic Act. He was on a scrambler bike. That case has to run its course, of course, and we wouldn't want to say anything that may in any way interfere with that. But when we talk about certain, you know, and it's often during community garda information, when we talk about the use of certain vehicles by young people, be it quads, you know, other vehicles, scooters, that type of stuff, things that are being used maybe not fully responsibly. It's this type of tragedy that we try and we're trying to avoid effectively, because it's not just Grace's life who's been cut short, and it's an incredibly sad situation for her, so much of her life ahead of her, but also for her families and friends, but also too, and I'm not offering sympathy as such, but for Keith Lee, an 18-year-old, made a decision. His life is probably destroyed now, and that of his family as well. And it was all because a vehicle which shouldn't have been on the road, seemingly was, by his own admission so far, being used in a manner that caused this incident. And it is really, really quite troubling. So that's why we do those appeals. It's tried to avoid stuff like that happening. And finally, in the Irish Times, Ireland's consumer watchdog has called for restaurants, cafes, hair salons and other service providers to ensure tipping policies are transparent so people don't inadvertently pay over the odds. The Competition and Consumer Protection Commission said technology has changed the tipping landscape as it is as it issued guidelines. It published research into tipping culture in Ireland, which found that 90% of consumers tip at least some of the time, with women and the over 35s most likely to tip. Two-thirds of Irish consumers believe tipping has become less voluntary, while one in five said they had recently paid a bill that included an unexpected extra charge. So obviously, listen, if there is a... tipping should be voluntary, I think, because you should be based on the service you received. So I think it's a bit strange to lock it into the price. But what's your views on tipping more generally? Are you inclined, or are you inclined to tip? Maybe you tap now, or Revolut, or use your card, right? Do you always make sure that you've got a little bit of cash on hand to tip? Or do you not put it in with the card payment because you might think that it goes to the employer and doesn't find its way down to the employee? Or do you find, honestly, because you know what, we're all being honest with each other, do you find now maybe if you use less cash, you're less inclined to tip? Or do you think maybe the price of a cup of coffee or a cup of or a fish and chips or something is already so expensive that you don't really think a tip's justified? And if so, is that fair on the worker who might be working at minimum wage, or if they're a certain age, well below minimum wage of an adult, and maybe they rely on their tips? So 90% of us apparently do tip at least some of the time. Do you? Don't you? Is there a reason why? Why not? Maybe you've worked for many years in the hospitality or retail sector, and you've seen a change, or a change in pattern maybe since cash became, you know, used less than we have now with sort of digital payments and so on and so forth. Be really interested if you have any comments in relation to that, or anything for that matter that we flagged there in our run through some of the newspapers today. We're joined on the programme by Councillor Jerry McMonagle. Good morning, Jerry. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Good morning to all the listeners.
Now, you've been asking Donegal County Council to review its homeless policy in a bid to provide more regional accommodation and more pathways to bring people into long-term accommodation. What was this off the back of, Jerry, and what problem are you highlighting and trying to resolve?
Well, it's multiple problems, Greg, actually. It's a lack of housing. The growing number of people who are homeless but are not recorded. The fact that as part of that strategy, we've adopted that we have two very well-run and managed hostels. Unfortunately, one's in Bundoran and one's in Letterkenny. We all know the size and geography of the county, and homelessness is right across the county. So if we have someone who is... living in Inishowen, say, and they come into homelessness, they could either be put in Letterkenny, or in some cases they were put in Bundoran. Mm. If there's families, if there's children involved, they could be put in either Letterkenny or Bundoran, and their schools that they would have attended would not be in these areas, and that would be a whole massive upheaval for the children as well. there's then just the lack of social housing. I know we are in a massive building program, but it may be another 6 to 12, 18 months before that's fully realised, the benefits of it. And in the meantime, we have a social housing remediation scheme that has yet to be passed by the government. And we have multiple, we have 80 houses which are currently vacant. We probably have hundreds of people who are living in houses which are intolerable and not fit for habitation. And the houses that are going to be coming on stream are more than likely going to be used to house these people in these deplorable conditions.
Are you on about defective concrete block houses, Jerry?
Yeah, so yeah, the defective concrete block. Yeah, and the people who are currently on the housing waiting list will be pushed back and back, and that will lead to homelessness. Mm. I just finished this point. That will lead to homelessness because a lot of the high rents is being charged. A lot of people are finding it hard to sustain that.
Yeah,
and they are now in danger of getting, and a lot of people are getting terminations, and we have nowhere to put them.
Yeah, it's you kind of went on to ask the question or answer the question I was going to ask, because it is quite a different scenario here in Donegal, because we have the housing waiting list, as you mentioned, and I want to go back to homelessness, but just address this point first. And then we have people in council accommodation, social housing, that really is not fit to be lived in. So they will be housed ahead of those on the waiting list in areas where they need somewhere to go, because we don't really have a plan from government yet as to how we remediate social housing.
No, and in fairness to Donegal County Council, we put in a plan in 2022 for how we could remediate our houses, how we could turn them around and put people out, get their houses remediated, that's the demolition or whatever, and get them back in again. And this has not been accepted since 2022, and we're now in 2026, and we still haven't got the scheme passed by the government. So nobody can understand that. I spoke directly to the minister. I met him a few months back there in Limerick, and I spoke to him, and I asked him, and he said it was imminent. It was, Jerry, you will know in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Yeah. And that was last October, and here we are now in going into February 2026, and no sign of that.
Yeah.
But the big problem that's happening now is around, we have a place finder team on the council who, when people present as homeless or have a termination order, they set about trying to find suitable accommodation for them. And the problem now is that their incomes is not sustainable. The HAP won't be given to them, and therefore their homelessness is going to happen. And the options we have now is the Letterkenny Hostel and the Bundoran Hostel. And that's why I'm asking for the review to look at it. At this homelessness in total and the round, there's many people living with their aunts, their sisters, their mums in overcrowding situations, but they're not classed as homeless.
That's what I wanted to tease out with you, right? Because if you wanted to frame this a certain way, you could say the situation is improving in Donegal. The latest or the last figures I saw, 164 people homeless across the northwest. In Donegal, 45 people were accessing emergency accommodation in November. These figures were released earlier this month, down from 50 at the end of October. So, but we all know that that's not homelessness in this county. So if they're the official statistics that we're working off of, Jerry, how do we actually deal with the problems? You're quite right. We all know couch surfing, staying in boxed rooms, people doing whatever they can to try and keep their children in the school that they're accustomed to. We know, fine, rightly, it's over 45. But if that's the figure that we have to work with, how do we come up with solutions? Because, it all looks relatively rosy compared to the reality.
Yeah, and you're not classed as homeless until you actually present yourself at the council offices and say, I have nowhere to live tonight. And then you're classed as somewhere as, if you presented yourself at the council and said, look, I'm homeless, but my sister's put me up, or my aunt's put me up, or I've had to move back to my mother's because I've had it received a termination notice, which informed you 6 months ago and has come to fruition now But I'm going to be living at my mother's until I get somewhere. You're not really classed as homeless there. That's not a homeless statistic. It's only when you're out and you're homeless and you're there, they only take that right. They know where to go the night they're homeless. Now, how do they measure that? Now, there was a time when we give people vouchers. That didn't really work. We have to acknowledge that it was abused in some situation. But we're in a worst-case scenario now because we have the defective blocks. We have a strategy that, while it works for some people, it doesn't work for everyone. We have people, many reasons people become homeless through, whether it's been addiction problems, mental health issues. And while the hostels are good for accommodation, I don't know about the wraparound services and how good they are. And then if someone has an addiction or a mental health issue, goes to a hostel and there's other people in there that might make them feel uneasy. So look, there's a number of, I think we need to review the strategy there now since 23 and it'll be till 28. And we're mid-term now. I think it's a good time to review it. But they look at all the problems that we have in this county.
There's two things too that are particularly, it doesn't feel right. So given an example of someone who quite simply has to move out of their house in Inishowen, for an example, it's uninhabitable.
Yeah.
Mould and all that kind of stuff. If they present to the council could theoretically and maybe in reality say to them, that's okay, well, we have some accommodation for you in Bundoran, which is, you know, if you travel to Galway from Malinhead, most of your journey's in Donegal, or at least half of it is, right? So it's, and they refuse that because clearly it's not practical. That looks like, or they could be put down as saying, well, the local authority tried to help you and you refuse that. That's one issue. And another issue as well, and I'm sure you get these contacts all the time as we do, people, you know, young families, maybe one parent, get notice from their landlord that they're going to be evicted in 2 months. And they've spent a month trying to find alternative accommodation. They can't find it. No one will take the HAP, etc. And they go to the council. The council say to them, well, you're not homeless and we can't even really help you until the day that you leave the accommodation that you're in. So that's just stockpiling problems. So there's two things, two further things that's really wrong, it seems, or feels it's really wrong with the system in our county.
Yeah, and that's the one of the reasons as well, you know, why I'm looking for this review, that not everything's perfect, and there's not boxes for everyone or every problem. We need to get imaginative at times. We need to look at how we can do this. Like, we've been banging the drum for a number of years now around modular homes to facilitate people who are living in defective block houses, to facilitate the remediation when that comes. And that has been annually, monthly, weekly, being resisted by the council, by the department. They're not funding it, and they're not going to fund it. And you have to, it begs the question, why? Because this is a problem we've seen for years that was coming down the road at us. It's at our door now. It's a bit late to be starting to scramble around, trying to look for solutions when the solutions have been there for years. So look, we're going to continue banging that drum, because I think that would be a way to help the housing situation. But the people are homeless now, the high rents, their income isn't sustainable to maintain them high rents. There are going to be more people coming homeless. We have not got the houses to house them. So the two hostel solutions, while they're very good hostels, are not going to answer these problems.
Okay, well,
and solve them for us. So we need to look at something different.
I beg your pardon. We'll see what this if this review takes place and what it shows us. Thank you very much indeed. That's Sinn Féin Councillor Jay McMonagall speaking. Okay, joined in studio now by Marty Morrissey. Marty, good morning.
Good
to you.
Morning,
thank you so
Greg.
Much for this joining
us. This is becoming an annual event, which I love.
It's great.
Any excuse to come to Donegal, even when it is pouring rain last night or freezing cold this morning, which is beautiful.
I just don't know. But by the time you leave here, it'll be something else. I see it's brightening up.
Well, any excuse to visit the people of Donegal, I love coming here. So,
well,
and
you're
not
get a
always
rest
on football days, so
yes,
it's great.
Yes, exactly. You're going to get a respite anyway, because you've joined forces again with Clest to Travel, and you are creating the perfect holiday. It's another Marty party in Spain.
Yes.
From the 1st to the 8th of October 2026. And whilst that might seem a long way away...
No, it's not that far away at
I'm
all.
Scheduling stuff for February now, and it's like, no, it's going like this, isn't it? So talk to us about the Mardi Party in Spain.
And I don't know about you, Greg, but when I was in school, I was dying to get the hell out of it. And then when you leave school... Oh, my God. Well, you know, you know, want things to kind of slow down, stay the way they are. You know, there's no need to get a year older. Yes. You know, just take your time. Yes, I'm going to, I was going to say I was going to Donegal. I'm going to Calpe in Spain, and which is lovely. You fly to Alicante and you head down. We pick you up in a bus and way down to Calpe, which I only discovered when Deirdre Grant and myself went there a year and a half ago. I never heard of Calpe, but it is a magnificent, beautiful, beautiful place. With loads of beaches, loads of cafes, beautiful rock that you can climb if you're in the mood. I'm not, but anyway, if you are. Yeah, it's great. And the hotel is lovely. But to tell you about the event, I mean, I'm always tweaking it. And this year, I've invited Johnny Logan. We're having our own Eurovision night.
Sounds fantastic.
So we have Johnny Logan, Paul Harrington, Charlie McGettigan, and Niamh Kavanagh. Of course, you know with Dancing with the Stars, and Linda Martin. So on the Sunday night of our week, we're going to have a Eurovision night and let them sing their songs and do other things as well. But we also have, I'm delighted to say, Honor, one of Donegal's finest. I was talking to Dean last night and they're delighted they're going to be coming over. They were with us last year as well. Mm-hmm. And they're hugely popular. I just think they're fantastic. I love them to bits. So Honor are coming, but my good friend Noel Cunningham is coming as well. Noel is a local legend. He's a national treasure. And he's a great friend of mine and he's coming as well. So there's a large Donegal contingent.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, we are really well represented, aren't we?
You're very well represented. And you were very well represented at the shows last year because a large crowd came from Donegal, which I really appreciated, and many of my friends. But we also have, let me tell you, we had the Tumbling Paddies last year. We have the Whistling Donkeys coming this time. We have Tammy Fleming. We have Cherish the Ladies. We have the Galway Tenors. We have Sean Kane. Who I love. Mm-hmm. I just think he's fantastic. So we have a huge, huge lineup. We've also
this would be
talent.
A tough gig to pull together in Ireland, right?
Because, yeah, although I did it.
These are all household names. These are stars, right?
Yeah.
And to pull it together in Ireland would be a challenge in and off with Diaries and everything like that. There, so to be able to pull this off. Maybe it's easier because you're telling them come over and do it in the sun. I don't know.
Well, it is an attraction now, in fairness. Yeah. But you do like why you started the conversation with me. It is planning and it is a long way out, but it's not really because, like, already, sure, what date is today? 26th, 27th of January. Yep. We're almost in the 1st of February at the weekend. So there's 1 month gone and you just have to plan. And I don't know. I mean, it's. You're just feeling this cold weather. Isn't it something to look forward to?
Yes.
And also what I call it a paddy summer in Calpe, because you're there from 20 degrees to 24 degrees. So you're not like Christy Moore at a concert where you're sweating from your brow. It's lovely. It's ideal for us. And it's great fun. And of course, we've entertainment by the pool as well during the day. So you've a mixture of and Patrick O'Sullivan, I know he's not from Donegal, but he's from Cork and he's a huge hit. And he's going to be with us as well.
The Galway Tenors you mentioned, right?
Yes.
There's something about seeing tenors live.
There is.
I always like to see them on a show because there's just, you know, and this is not in any way to put any other artist down, but there's just something, the instrument is the voice, and to see it in the flesh, it's just something
and,
really quite
remarkable. And they do a mixture of opera, but they also do the Fields of Athenry. Yeah. They're pure entertainers. Mm. And they've done loads of gigs with me over the years. But to make a point, when we did a gig here in Letterkenny, and I'm hoping to do more Irish next year or at the end of this year, but Deirdre Grant was the one that inspired me with John Skehan to go to... to go to Spain. I said, not a hope. But I went to Benalmadena 2 years ago. Then we discovered Calpe last year. So this is my third year. But you know, Craig, what I love about it is, and what the reaction we got last year, the emails we got afterwards, which was very, very, I couldn't believe we got emails, was the fact that people, not alone was the music, it was the social interaction.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And there's a lot of loneliness in Ireland and a lot of isolation. And this is a way of communicating. And you don't have to be... you don't have to be married. A lot of people went because they had lost their partners. Some people were recovering from illness. But they made friends. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing. It is not just about having somebody with you. You can come on your own, and I guarantee you, by the time you leave, you'll have about 300 friends.
Oh, for sure. And there's friendships formed at these types of trips. We would do them here, of course, as a lot of radio stations do. There are forever friendships, and they tend to book again because other people are going. It's a little community, right?
Yeah.
And I like the fact that, you know, you're quite right. It can be a big step if, say, for instance, you lose someone close to you, right? It can be a big step to get out into the world and live your life. Well, here's a way of doing it, you know.
It is. I totally agree with you, Greg. I mean, that's what I discovered, that, you know, I don't think people are going out as much as they used to since COVID. Mm. But this is more than just a music. And you have, in fairness, if I may say, you've got top artists, whether you like the Eurovision or whether you love Liam O'Connor, who's the Guinness Book of Records for the button accordion, or you love the Whistling Donkeys. It doesn't matter. It is more of the meeting for breakfast, the meeting for lunch, the walking down the beach, and just talking to people. And suddenly you realise, God, I know your man and I know his cousin and all this sort of thing. Mm. And you get out of yourself. And I think that's important.
The price points... You've struck it really good, because I'll tell... there's nothing in it for me. I'm not on commission, but I just really find it quite interesting that you've managed to pull it together. So return flights to Alicante, your airport transport, 7 nights accommodation, and that includes breakfast and dinner each day. It's not just evenings as well. There's entertainment each afternoon and people milling about the place. Mm-hmm. There's a real celebrity feel to it. Don't worry about that. Noel Cunningham will deliver that at the very least.
Every single time.
Entertainment on 6 of the 7 evenings. You're going to be there, of course, emceeing. And the price point's $1,599 per person. Now, if you were to book something for June or July without all the entertainment and something relatively modest, because I've been looking, you're at that price point, if you know what I mean. And, you know, you've still got very pleasant weather in October.
Oh, gosh, you have.
As good as our summers.
Oh, 100%. Well, I don't have...
summers. But when I say our summers, I don't know when the sun's shining.
Yeah.
Right. Not the
summers. Oh, no, don't worry. I'm with you on there. Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing I said about Calpe. I mean, it's not hot. It's 23, 24, 25 degrees. So it's lovely. You can go for the walk during the day, or you can lie by the pool, or you can go down by the beach. And the beaches, there's miles of beach, and there are good beaches, and there's lovely walks. But, you know, I mean, and if you want to go into Alicante for a day, it's only half an hour, 40 minutes down the road. But the price point, as you say, I think it is great value. And I don't know how Deirdre Grant and Calesta Travel do it, but they do it. I don't have any magic on that. Yeah. And Deirdre Grant, as you know, is a Letterkenny woman, is a Donegal woman. So she's one of your own. But she has the magic. I don't know how she does it, but she's brilliant.
Yeah, all right, okay. And it's not all just on the one plane. There's flights from various locations as well, dependent on...
You can go from
Dublin,
Belfast. Yeah. You can go from come down to Shannon. You can go down to Cork if you really want, or Farn Vaur. Yeah. But certainly Dublin and Belfast are probably yes. If I can read out just if you do want to book, and Deirdre's tied up for the next couple of days, so you have to ring the Dublin number if you don't mind. It's 01-833-6935. That's 01. That's Dublin number 833-6935. Or email Deirdre at calestratravel.com.
And at this point, a deposit gets you away, doesn't it?
It does. Yep.
So €250 secures your place. And it is a first come, first serve basis. I presume the numbers aren't infinite either.
And to be honest with you, Greg, because so many went last year, it's kind of flying out the door. Mm. And I haven't had a chance because of work. I haven't had a chance, but I took these couple of days. I was in Radio Kerry on Monday. I was in Midwest yesterday, and I'm here with you today.
Okay.
So I kind of did my West and Northwest tour, but I wanted to give everybody a chance and send it out. Now, it has been advertised on our website, but at the same time, I wanted to reach out, because particularly Donegal, if I may say so, were huge supporters of mine, and I just wanted to say thank you for being there last year, and I hope you'll come this year as well.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. We'll retain that telephone number that you gave out there in case, I'm sure people will be looking for it. It's a fantastic lineup. Noel Cunningham, Sean Keane, the Tumbling Paddies, Cherish the Ladies, Anor, the Galway Tennis, Johnny Logan, Paul Harrington, Niamh Kavanagh, Trevor Sexton and Gerard O'Donnell. And you can see there's going to be, as Marty mentioned, a Eurovision theme on one of the nights as well, which is great. I mean, hear Johnny Logan sing Hold Me Now live.
100%. And you know, all the Eurovision and rock and roll kids were Paul Harrington and Charlie McGettigan, you know, and I mean, Hold Me Now and
Leave
all those.
Kavanaugh, you can go through the whole
I have to say the reaction is phenomenal. So I would suggest if you do, look, it's your call, whoever, if you'd like to come, I'm telling you whether you're on your own or you're bringing friends or you're bringing your husband, your wife, your sister, your brother, you'll be more than welcome. So that's 01833-6935. While I'm here, Greg, can I just talk about Hidden Hearing for 1 minute?
Yes, of course.
Because it's kind of tied up with the Marty Party, because I find that, you know, if you have a hearing difficulty or you're worried about it, Hidden Hearing is a wonderful organisation. And you know what I find is when I go into loud bars myself at this stage, I kind of say, what?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Bit
and you're kind of, and you're saying, I don't want to say anything. No. And I'm getting older. No, I'm not going to say anything. But this, what Hidden Hearing do is phenomenal. And they have clinics in Letterkenny here with Mike and Aisling and Killybegs. But there's a 7-point plan, and you go in, and it's totally confidential. And I saw them operating at the Ploughing Championships. And my grandmother, God be good to her now, had a big, the last couple of years was frustrating. But now it's like James Bond. Mm. You have this little thing on your fingertip. And I had a friend of mine who was a sound engineer. And we were trying to be the fancy DJ when we started off in our teenage years. And he had it for 6 months before he told me.
Yeah,
didn't even see it.
Yeah.
So it is, and it gives you the confidence. And it gives you the confidence to hear the music, to hear the chat. Mm. And it is well worth doing.
Can I say one thing too? Often it's framed as doing it for yourself, right? And you should do it for yourself. But I'm speaking from my own experience here with my parents. If your family are getting on to you to do it, right? Because they're only starting to say it now is because it's getting frustrated.
Yeah.
People are getting frustrated. You're repeating yourself.
Yeah.
The telly's much louder than is comfortable for other people in the house. People resist it for a variety of reasons. If you can't do it for yourself, and I'm thinking of you, Dad, if you can't do it for yourself, do it for someone else.
Correct.
Because it is
frustrating.
It's frustrating.
And people do get impatient.
You know, and my dad was very clever. You would swear when he was in the pub, he could hear everything.
Really, yeah.
Couldn't hear a thing.
Yeah.
But he could act as...
Yeah, and you do develop mechanisms.
Oh, for sure.
That you say, all right, Jack, good man. Oh, good man, Greg, good man, Marty, whatever it is.
But
and you haven't a clue what's been said.
There's so much stuff in life that there aren't solutions for.
Yeah.
And here's one we have.
But here is one, and there is no stigma anymore. And I mean, and over in February, they're giving free wax. Good man. You might not have a hearing problem at all. It just might be a wax problem.
Exactly.
And you can go in and get it done, and it's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And do you know why I understand? Because they used to be, maybe back in the day, they were very, very big, and I still wouldn't see a stigma with them at all anyway. But back in the day, they were big, and if you're a proud person, you could see it as, I'm not getting old. So, but anyway, I just see them as glasses for your ears, and no one has a problem with glasses.
That's a nice way of describing it, Greg, if I may say so. I haven't heard that phrase. It's like glasses for your ears.
Well, I just made it up. 2-time Imro Award winner there.
Oh, excuse me. I genuflect here in the studio.
I didn't lift that up off the floor. Hey, come here. Before I let you go, Donegal, Kerry and Ballyshannon, I don't know the significance of that game. Obviously, I think any team want to win a game. Where do you see Donegal in the All-Ireland shake-up this year?
Oh, I see them big time. And I think, I haven't been talking to Jim McGuinness lately, but the inclination that I have is that Donegal are going to aim for the league. They're going to try and get a...
They're going to try and win it.
Yeah, I think they probably should. I think to do the world a good, and the way the system is now, that the gap between the league and the championship is so minimal that you need to be getting your form correct and right. Now it doesn't always matter. I mean, Kerry have done it. Kerry have won the league. Jack O'Connor's done a 5 or 6 time win the league, win the All Ireland. And let's be honest, Donegal are not that far away. They are the All Ireland finalists, and they are the Ulster champions. But it would be nice to win a national title. Now, ultimately, Greg, we all know that by the time it comes July and August, nobody gives a hoot about the league. But it is a national title. And when you're at this stage of the year, I think it is invaluable to get that rhythm.
I could never understand, because winning is a habit, I believe. And it doesn't matter in what competition. And at the very, very top, I could never get my head around the idea of preparing to fail.
Yeah.
Because effectively, if you say, right, we'll secure Division One status and then blah blah blah. Right? Yeah. That I don't think the high end sports brain can differentiate like that. Sort of say right. Well, it doesn't matter if we win this game, but we'll definitely want to win the next one after that.
Yeah, I don't think you can differentiate. And you know, the league, when I was a young fella, some of the league games were played in October, November, and then you'd play more games February, March. So you could time it in such a way that you're peaking at June, July, and hoping to get to August, September. It's different now. And they're still learning how do we do this. And you throw in a whole new set of rules, which is changing the face of Gaelic football. For me, anyway, it's given me back my love of Gaelic football that I did. Because when I was a young lad, when you'd watch a match on TV, you'd go out and you'd bang a ball against the wall and you'd pretend that you were Micheál Ó Maolaodha, Hurtig Ó Micheál Ó Maolaodha. In the games I played out in the lawn, I always scored the winning goal in the last kick of the game. Mm-hmm. It was an amazing sequence of results. Of course, that never happened in reality. But we dreamt. And that kind of dreaming is back with the new rules, the two-pointer, the solo and goal.
Also, we apologise for the blip, but we're back.
Exactly.
One final thing. I was speaking to a sports psychologist who believed that, you know, when you're at the very, very top, and you're tweaking really with the top 1% or something, that psychologically the victory for Donegal last year was getting to the final. Do you think there's any weight in that?
I think there is. I don't know if there is. I don't think the team would ever think that. I don't think Jimmy Guinness would think that.
I wouldn't say it to them either.
No, I would not. I think it depends on your perspective. I think, let me put it like this. In my own county, in 1995, we won the All-Ireland. For 81 years, like 1914 was when Clare won the hurling before that. We never dreamt of seeing a Clare jersey in Croke Park. We were happy to get to Croke Park having won the Munster Championship. We didn't care if we got to the final. Now, we did probably. But we were so glad. So it depends on your perspective. Kerry's perspective is what we all need to aspire to. Kerry only concentrated on winning the All-Ireland. And it's a mindset. But the Donegal, they don't need me to say it because I'm a huge fan of Donegal, but they have the cocktail, they have the mix, they have the height of midfield, they have the goalkeeper, they have everything going for them, and they're not that far away.
And the conveyor belt.
They have the conveyor belt.
And that's fantastic. So finally, your tip for Sam this year? And don't just say that. I mean, you wouldn't.
No.
Can you see past Kerry?
I can't, to be honest with you. I think the new game will suit Kerry. Mm-hmm. And they have a superstar in David Clifford, who I think is actually unmarkable at the moment, and Paddy Clifford. I think Paddy Clifford would have to be marked tighter when it comes to it and not give him the freedom of the pitch. And I think underneath that, I do think Donegal. I genuinely do. I think Donegal, I think Mayo, I think Andy Moran with Mayo will do well. I just feel that there is a conveyor belt there as well. And Dublin will respond and come back. But they'd be the main contender. I think Galway as well. You know what I mean? To me, it's number one Kerry, number two Donegal, number three, four and five would be Mayo,
Dublin,
Galway.
But I
think
that's a testimony to the state of the game. It's in a good situation.
It is
where
in
you
a good
have
situation.
All right, you might have a horse out front, but you have a pack waiting for one to break through.
And Clare to win the hurling. Just have
in
Donegal.
I didn't even need to ask you that.
No, not at all.
Right, okay. So if you want to join the Marty Party in Spain in October, give us a buzz and we'll pass on that number for you and you can secure your place for 250 notes. Thanks very much indeed, Marty.
Greg, lovely being with you.
Back
and thank you for having
me. The break. Some of your comments coming in so far this Wednesday morning on the issue of tipping. I don't tip. It's not my responsibility to pay a business's staff. Tipping in a coffee shop, restaurant or hairdressers, it's ridiculous. They should be grateful I choose their business to spend my cash and not expect me to pay them for doing so. Okay. On the St. Patrick's Day trips, a perfect time for a coup in Ireland. When the cats are away, the mice can play. That would be presuming it's the elected government that run the country. I think it's going to tick along all right without the guys and dolls from Dáil Éireann there, to be honest with you. Minister Dara O'Brien was just in Brazil at the COP25. He must be fond of it. Such a carbon footprint for the Minister for the Environment. That's the irony. This is why people struggle with being told what to do about turf, for an example, when you have someone working in the space of environment back and forwards from Brazil. So in other words, I need to go and check. I need to fly there and check what the crack is, and then I can go back and tell you what you can't do. Greg, the Navy's L.E. George Bernard Shaw ship is in Rathmullen Pier on regular occasions, and I often like to take the grandkids to see it. Over the years, I can't help but notice the rust on it. if this ship is our defence, we're in trouble. We are in serious trouble. I get where you're coming from, and it's a very good point. Obviously, me and you know, right, don't we, that that's surface rust and the ship can function fine in that situation. But yes, you're right, and it's a beautiful setting, actually, for one of those big ships to pull in. On the issue of X, I myself have left X recently because of how I saw it going. That was before the Grok controversy. I never saw any nudity, fake or real, but it epitomises doom scrolling because of bots and, in my experience, very misogynistic, confrontational people. I fully agree with Donegal County Council leaving and think more should follow, especially if they pay for their accounts. Love the show. Well, thank you very much for your nice comments. I posted on this yesterday and on my social media. And, you know, this is where I start kind of going, whoa. Because you would imagine that negative comments, racism, misogyny, you know, very strong accusations. I think a lot of people would say, well, that comes from the right, okay, where most, you know, the majority of people on Twitter, X probably are. But I'll tell you one thing. The left, in inverted commas, those that profess to be the guardians of all that is good, my word, they can get nasty when they want to as well. It's a horseshoe to some extent, I think, and it meets in the middle, and the extremes of both very, very nasty. They will say anything to get your point across, because I get it from both, you see, because I'm relatively centrist, I think. I'm starting to think I am. Rightio, at that hour went like a rocket to the moon. So as we've been mentioning over the course of the morning, we haven't been mentioning, we've been asking your views on tipping, and I'll get to some of those comments on the moment. But it's off the back of some information disseminated by Simon Barry, Director of Research and Advocacy and International Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, the CCPC. Good morning to you, Simon.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for joining us. Right, so this study has thrown up some interesting findings, I think most people agree, in terms of our tipping culture here in Ireland, which is very different to, say, for instance, the United States' tipping culture. It's not as formalised here.
Exactly. So we're very aware in the CCPC that new technologies are playing a really important role in the way that consumers live their lives, but also in this case, how they engage with different service providers and how they pay and how they tip. So we're hearing more from consumers about their experiences in this area, and hence we decided to undertake this research in order to better understand consumer behaviours and attitudes and experience as they encounter them, especially in relation to some of these new technologies which are changing the landscape of tipping.
Yeah, and I think really what the consumer want, what the public want, is a very clear situation. What's included, what's not included, which terminal is for paying generally, what might be a tipping terminal, what happens if you tip while you tap, for an example, does that money find its way to your server, or what's the policy, etc. Transparency, I think, would alleviate an awful lot of probably what we're going to be going through.
100%. And we in the CCPC are huge believers in the importance of transparency in all markets, in all settings, because it's transparency and easily accessible information that allows consumers to make a free choice about what it is that they would like to do and what it is that they would like not to do. And in this case, the key principle underpinning the guidance that we're issuing to service providers across hospitality and other personal service areas is that consumers must be able to easily choose whether or not they tip, and if they choose to tip, how much. And that's the underlying principle. Exactly as you say, the guidance that we're issuing today and on which we're engaging with industry stakeholders is to prevent accidental tipping by making sure that any tipping terminals that they use are kind of separate and clearly labelled. And for, you know, the payment terminal itself, tipping should be easy to avoid. And then where a business might have a mandatory service charge, businesses must very, very clearly communicate that in advance. So for a restaurant, that means a notice on the window, including very clear signage on menus, for example, so that consumers are making a fully informed choice about what it is that they are committing to. And where a service charge is optional, It's really important that businesses don't automatically add such optional charges to a bill. Those must only be levied on a bill after the consumer has explicitly agreed. In other words, it must be opt-in, not opt-out. So they're the key messages to businesses and service providers out there. It's very straightforward. We totally understand that businesses in these areas are by nature in the business of serving customers, and we understand their strong interest in serving customers well, and that's why we're launching this guidance in order to make it as easy as possible for consumers to make an informed personal decision about whether or not to tip and if they're tipping by how much.
And it is guidance, Simon. Do we need to step beyond that at any point in the interests of fairness for the consumer, but also for the people that work very hard? And it's really unfair if a consumer believes that they are rewarding, you know, a good service or a nice experience, and that reward is not actually getting to the people they intend it to.
So I guess in our research, what we found from talking to consumers is that Irish consumers are positively disposed to tipping. So 9 in 10 consumers have tipped at least some of the time in their recent encounters with these type of service providers. What they are saying, and they also, in the way that they think about their approach to tipping, they have a very clear way of thinking about it, which makes a direct connection between the decision to tip and how much, and the quality and the extent of the service that's provided. So I guess that's the foundations which consumers are bringing to their tipping decisions. But they are saying, in many cases, that they believe tipping is becoming a bit less voluntary, and that they would like to see businesses make it easier to opt out of tipping. So that there are some of the key messages that we are sharing today, and we're trying to I guess work constructively with industry players. It's our experience that, you know, businesses are there to serve customers, and what we're trying to do here is to help traders ensure the consumers have all the information that they need before tipping, and to guard against accidental non-compliance with the law in circumstances where that happens.
Simon, thank you so much for your time. Simon Barry, Director of Research, Advocacy and International Competition and Consumer Protection Commission. Thank you. On the issue of housing and renting, many of you have messaged in. Very true. Family of five in the house, renting the last 15 years. Both work full time. It's impossible to get a mortgage to buy a house, even though we're showing we're paying rent every week. We don't know what we're going to do, as there's nowhere to rent, and anything that is up for renting, cheapest €1,500. This country is a joke. You'd be as well not work, as you're better off with benefits than you are entitled to, that they are entitled to. It's not always the case. I understand the frustration. I really, really do. Why don't we count someone's rental payment record, though, as an ability to afford a mortgage? There was talk of doing that in other countries. Why don't we do it here? It should be factored in. It should be included when applying for a mortgage. You know, if you've paid your rent consistently for 15 years and it's increased, and, you know, that should prove that you're able to pay a mortgage. I think it's really unfair that it doesn't, because it would feel less like wasted money, I think, if you felt that this rent was going towards your ability to get a mortgage. Do you know there is that sense sometimes that rent is dead money? I'm paying £1,500 to rent someone else's house, but I could get my own house and pay £1,150 a month, have £400 left over and have my own place. You know, that's not fair. It feels like it's wasted money. So why don't we have a system whereby your rental payment history works very much in your favour in terms of your ability to pay a mortgage? Hi, Greg. The housing crisis is primarily the result of long-term policy failures to plan for predictable demand growth and deliver sufficient housing supply. For years, construction lagged well behind population growth, while the state also accepted asylum seekers and people fleeing war zones at levels that exceeded available housing capacity. Instead of addressing this backlog through accelerated building, planning reform and infrastructural development or investment, the burden is increasingly being shifted onto the private rental sector. Not all landlords are large investors or corporations. Many are ordinary people who use hard-earned savings to purchase or build a single property as retirement or pension income. Rising costs, mortgages, interest rates, insurance, maintenance and compliance are already pushing small landlords out of the market. Over-targeting them through restrictive rent regulations risks further reducing rental supply, ultimately worsening affordability and availability for tenants. Sustainable solutions must focus on increasing supply, not penalising one group for systemic failures. Thanks very much for these comments, by the way. I'm on the housing waiting list, but renting a private house with the help of HAP. The house I'm in now is very bad with defective concrete and recently got tested. My problem now is when this house is for demolition, where do we go? Houses are like hen's teeth. An awful lot of property is rented out to Ukrainians and now we, the Irish, have nowhere to go. Greg, can you find out why it was only the local Fianna Fáil party representatives that were invited to the new bishop installation in the cathedral on Sunday? Strange, don't you think? Fianna Fáil are the Mayor Leda Kenny and the Kirloch of the county as well, so they're two Fianna Fáil members. So they, by default, if they were Sinn Féin members, independent members, a Labour member, they would be the ones that were invited. There was an open invitation to anyone to attend as well, but it so happens that two Fianna Fáil people hold the Letterkenny mayoralship and the Cathedral of the county, so I presume that's why it is. I wonder, could you highlight the difficulty of a business trying to get workers? Either they don't want to work or they show up on time or they don't want to show up on time. It seems to be too much free money. They're on about the foreigners. At least some of them will work. Okay, I get where we're coming from with the casual language of that, othering people. But anyway, is that a problem? Are you in business? Do you find it's difficult to get people to come to work and when they're at work to work? And when they come to work to come on time, let us know. Maybe you've been in business as well for a long time and you can tell us a little bit about the experience and how things have changed. Two more comments before we get you those bingo numbers. And I tip for going beyond the necessary service. The wages are for providing you with the service you're there for already. Tipping should be for beyond the minimum as a reward. I completely reject minimum wage workers relying on tips. We shouldn't be subsidising businesses paying their employee. No one should rely on tips, and the more prevalent they are, the more employers will rely on them. See the US. If the business can't keep staff on because they pay too little, then the market should dictate that. They close down, and if they don't raise wages to compete, businesses can't afford to stay open. Maybe pressure will finally be placed on the government to force utility and rental prices down so employers can afford to properly pay their employees. And finally, just for now, on St. Patrick's Day morning, it's an absolute joke our government minister is running here and there for St. Patrick's Day. There's no call for it. Are they completely stupid and not see the problems we have as Irish people? It's just a jaunt for them. And Minister Charlie McConnell should be ashamed of himself heading to Thailand or wherever and his own people at the pin of their collar on a day-to-day basis with day-to-day problems. Stay here and deal with our issue, not the world's. So I don't really care what the County Council does on social media, if the truth be told, but it was proposed that the council come off X, and effectively it looks like they're going to do it. And I wrote on social media yesterday, just to put it into context, that Donegal County Council leaving X, a strange move in my opinion. Like all social media, it has its bad actors, but it remains an important space. I believe it was critical in getting the DCB scheme, for all its faults, on the agenda and played a role in the surgical hub issue as well, because I was able to use it through my platform to tag in national politicians to the point where they couldn't ignore it. Anyway, it's also been, I think, very important in spreading the message of this county from a tourism and products perspective with the likes of the Buy Donegal and Love Donegal initiatives. If you look at the statistics, each council tweet reaches hundreds, if not thousands, of people. Now, there's not always an interaction, but you can see how many are being reached. So there are citizens who get their information from X, and I would be of the view that they deserve that information there too. I think it's also an important place for the public to hold the local authority to account. And in its absence, it opens the way for unofficial accounts and misinformation. X is hostile. I know myself, I've been there. And also this recent trend of AI nudification, absolutely disgusting. And we spoke about that extensively on this program. Absolutely horrible. But we can't hide from the fact that most social media platforms face similar issues as well. You can go on Facebook and see one page dolled up as another, i.e. some pervert walking around a beach with a 4K camera on his head. I presume it's a he. And it's about wonderful walks on a beach, right? Well, really what it's about is capturing women and children, I'm sure, you know, in bikinis and stuff like that. That's on Facebook, right? So it's everywhere. An ex is one of the worst offenders. The one thing I've noticed, though, most opposed to leaving ex seem to be more left-leaning politicians. The Greens proposed a motion in Dublin, the Dublin City Council is coming off ex. It's the only local authority outside Donegal that's doing so. In this county, it was proposed by Micheál Colum, and I think supported then by Declan Meehan. I'll get clarification on that, but I believe that was the case. Okay, so I'm sure they won't mind me saying that there might be more left-leaning politicians. I think, too, though, this does leave the council an easy, convenient exit strategy. But it is also a very useful resource to get real-time emergency alerts, the weather, road closures, water outages, that type of information. So what will be the impact then on the likes of hashtag promotions and also to how do we hold the local authority in that space accountable for its actions? Now, for that post, as controversial as it is, I was effectively accused of being a paedophile. That's what Facebook's like, right? Because I had that conversation. That's effectively what one woman effectively suggested by merely daring to have the conversation. But I don't care that much either. It's not a campaign of mine. I don't actually care that much either because I'm not really on X anymore. Councillor Ali Farron is 100% redress and... you've commented on this yourself. I believe you were going to put down a counter motion at the council meeting, but didn't think you were going to get the support, so you got rid of that notion. Am I reading that correct?
Yeah, that's fairly correct. Like the way the council works is people come in and they put a motion, and usually they get support. They have a seconder, and that's the way it works. But for some controversial issues, there might be a counter motion, like the screening of the 100 or the DCB block. They got their knickers in a twist, and there was a whole aggro about it. But there was none in relation to going off Twitter. And Twitter, you know, it is what it is, you know. And like what you were saying, yes, there's a lot of good stuff, and yes, there's a lot of bad stuff. But, you know, I'm an adult and I can decide what I want to be on and what I want to see. And so I felt that, you know, for the council to be coming off Twitter was shooting themselves in the foot. It was a way of getting vital information out quick. It's a, you know, like if you look back on the council's Twitter account, like it tells you about storms, tells you about when the Gritters is out, tells you about jobs that's coming up, and as you mentioned there, the likes of the Love Donegal, the Buy Donegal, we had T-Bex in the county a few weeks ago or a few months ago to promote the county, and they would have been using Twitter, and we were tagged in with Donegal, you know. So Twitter to me has a reach of 561 million people worldwide, you know, and I think we're shooting ourselves definitely in the foot by coming off it. From a county council, we need to be able to promote ourselves, promote the county. And, you know, like, you know, I think it's short-sighted. The people who were putting up the motion, they're not Twitter users or X users. You know, they're people, maybe they're scared of something that they don't know a wild lot about. I use all the social media to the best of my ability. And I used X quite a bit. And when we had the fight in relation to trying to get defective blocks highlighted, we used Twitter quite a bit because you can get on to every TD and every councillor and, you know, that's on it. So, yeah, I just think it's the wrong decision at this time.
Like you, I do have a little bit of a profile. Yours is greater as a councillor. You do get a criticism. There's no doubt about that. On X, you'll get criticism on X. And I'm seeing things like maybe was one of the reasons we're not live streaming the DCB meetings, which every person who's a victim of this crisis should have access to, I believe, right, is because potential abuse or misuse of the image or the footage, right? Unfortunately, that is 2026. I hate that. Should we not, though, be as a people? I hope it's very clear to anyone who listens to this show very regularly that the thing I find most abhorrent of everything is the abuse of children. It is absolutely horrendous, but also to the abuse of women particularly, and we talk about it so extensively on this show. What would mean something to me is if emotion was used to call on the government to exercise its power to police all social media. I'm on about the nudification that happens on Gemini, the nudification that happens on ChatGPT, the dodgy Facebook pages painted up as somewhere else, the exploitation of our children through TikTok and the algorithms that damage their mental health and give them, restricting children's access to porn sites. Where's the motion in relation to that? This makes it look like we're doing something, but there's a whole wealth of danger and hurt out there, and I believe motion should be saying, we have the power as an Irish people because we house these places to try and clean up what is the Wild West, Ali. And I think it was a missed opportunity and really is a distraction. Makes us feel like we're doing some? No. We're taking the council out of a place where they can be held to account, where they can spread information.
Yeah. You've nailed it there. You know, like, yes, there's a lot of bad things happening in X, but also there's a lot of things that are good and enjoy. Like, I flicked on X this morning, and the first thing came up was a football match. I for my sons, I support Everton, and I get all the feeds to do with Everton and things like that. So, you know,
I don't get any nude stuff at all. I'm not saying it's not there, and I've, as I say, listeners were asking me to shut up about this nudification stuff because I found it abhorrent. But I don't see any of that stuff.
I see it. I get it from time to time.
Do you? Okay.
Chance one eye when it comes up. But, you know, ultimately, the question here is, should Donegal Council have come off X just because? And I don't think that is the way forward. You know, I think, like, last year, I think the Donegal County Council, they won Council of the Year or whatever. And you don't win things like that by not telling the world how good you are. And I think, you know, if we're a rural county, it's 99 miles from where I am in Malinhead to Bundoran. Big county, and we need to be able to get news out and information out, and that is just one form of doing it. You know, there's people who's not on Facebook anymore, and Facebook's probably one of their biggest, but there's people who'd never put on Facebook. The younger people are probably more on Instagram and things like that there, but, you know, there is a cohort that use X, and like what you just said, you know, it's. I think it was a wrong move.
And I just find myself in this horrible situation in that it almost sounds like I'm defending X when I'm not, but I do understand social media and I know what goes on across all social media because I have an interest in social media, and it's everywhere. It's disgusting, and it's not to defend this, but X is being investigated now by the EU Commission. We house the X offices in this country. Surely you work from within. This is what we're always being told, that you work from within and try and resolve stuff. And if there are problems, you know, get Elon Musk out of the ownership of X then. Bring it back to what it might have been at one time. Or is this because it's kind of anti-establishment X to some extent, really, and people don't like it?
There is certainly, you know, there's certainly a lot of that to do with the people who own it and one thing or another. But the motion that we had on Monday in front of us, and I don't want to go down the road about is it you know, all the other things. The motion was simple, for the Donegal County Council to come off X. I thought, like, you know, for a county council to promote themselves was a stupid move. And so what if they do come off it? Like, what's going to happen? You know, is it going to affect the owners of X? Not one.
Yeah, but you see, the thing about it is, right, where we, if you are public-facing at all, where you get your biggest criticism is on X, right? And it's not always hurtful or racist or whatever. You get called out. So, obviously, it's in everyone's benefit if you're an elected rep or a council to get out of that space, because that's where you're going to be held to account. That's not where you're going to get, oh, fantastic work. You're going to get a comment saying, yeah, but why did such and such a person block the recording of DBC meetings? So obviously, you get of course, you don't want to be on that.
We should be closing down Highland Radio. You know, because, you know, for everybody that comes on here and says somebody's doing brilliant, there's other people coming on to say they're not. So, you know, is that going to be the way forward? That if you have a an opinion, you can't use it. You know, like you're people criticize you all the time.
Do they?
Because you said X and you said Y, okay, or whatever.
But you see, people can migrate to Blue Sky, where a lot of politicians have gone. Not a lot of politicians, a lot of journalists. Okay, now Blue Sky is incredibly liberal, and I'm not sure that that's fantastic either. I think some of the stuff that's accepted as normal and promoted actually could be really quite damaging to the very groups of people that we talk of. So, you know, this echo chamber, so shut down one echo chamber and everyone move to another echo chamber as if that's a good thing. Anyway, it's a fait accompli. I'm not going to mention it again. I just thought it interesting that you had what you had to say about it. And sure, on we go. As I say, I'm not going to lose any sleep. I don't really
but
use
Greg,
it.
Greg, but before you go, like, you mentioned Love Donegal. Like that's been massive for promoting this county. I think it got, according to the Donegal website, 99 million hits that got. And over the weekend that it was on, it was over 125 million views. You know, again, the Buy Donegal, which supports local businesses, is the initiative of the Donegal County Council. That got, I think, something like nearly 19 million views. You know, so it's important not to just, because a point of principle, people want off X. I don't think it was the right thing to do, although they've agreed now to do it. And maybe as a rookie politician, I should have been better prepared to have a counter argument on the day.
Well, if I was on an X now, I would be posting under that statement: a rookie politician, you've been at it for a few years now, you should know better.
Well, there you go. Am I offended? No.
All right, listen, come here. Good luck to you. Thanks very much indeed, Ali Farron. There, as I say, it's the thing about it is by merely me opening this question, I was accused of it being okay to nudify women and children. That's the problem nowadays. You can't have a conversation without those types of accusations, and it's done to stop you speaking. It's done to stop you speaking, and it's not from particularly one area of the political spectrum. It's from all areas. If you don't like something, I can't remember what the word is, but there's a phraseology whereby you're having a debate with someone, and it's how long it takes Hitler to be mentioned. I can't remember what the word is, but anyway, but it happens, and you'll know the conversation. It comes in really, really quickly. Well, the Hitler of our modern era is the accusation that you're in some way endorsing. A caller says ChatGPT and Gemini nudify is a bald faced lie. No, if you have the right instructions, both will do what Grok did and put someone in a bikini. I know that for a fact, and I don't know it for a fact because I did it. I know that for a fact because I checked it out before I posted. Not by putting anyone in a bikini before anyone suggests that. I personally would support the call to come off X. It's one of the most anonymous account abusers you can come across, for sure, indeed. Yep, and that's why sometimes it's important to have official accounts, isn't it? That councillor is correct. Read the county council coming off X. All the religious organisations in the world are on X to get their message of the gospel of Jesus Christ spread to the world, but they don't have to participate in the evil honours. I can go into a pub or hotel to eat a meal, but I don't have to participate in drinking alcohol because I choose not to drink alcohol. Lots of things go under the roofs of hotels, but I don't have to associate with it. And the Pope, very active on X, and he uses it because it is the space where Benjamin Netanyahu is, where Hamas is, where Iran is, you know, all of those places. People sort of go, you know, the narrative coming from, say, for instance, what was happening in Palestine, the narrative coming from Israel and Britain and Ireland to some extent, the truth was coming out via platforms such as X and Telegram, where people could get a connection. They were sending the videos of what was really going on there. So, you know, again, no place is perfect, but you need an alternative to the mainstream media too, to some extent, but it is the Wild Wild West. And as I say, it's not a hill I'm prepared to die on either. Gertrude Hughton is a gambling support counsellor at Donegal Parent and Family Support Services, Stranorla. Good morning, Gertrude. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, we're talking off the back of a new study that has found that those who were exposed to gambling as a young person, as a child, more likely to become problem gamblers in adulthood. So monkey see, monkey do. That does influence us then.
Yeah, I suppose that's no surprise to any of us working in this field, what this latest study that has come out yesterday has been saying. But that's not to say that everybody who's a problem gambler will have had parents who've gambled, you know, that type of thing. But yes, there's strong links between childhood experiences of gambling and problem gambling in adulthood.
And this study has backed up what's seen on the ground too by people like yourself at the coalface who see what's going on.
Yeah, yes. And sadly, yes, a lot of the clients that I would see, not all of them, but a lot of them, yes, you know, maybe grew up with where parents were going to arcades and they got used to that type of environment. Also, you know, that sense of there was nothing wrong with this behaviour either. You know, and a lot of, like, up until December 2020, like, 16-year-olds were able to go into arcades, gambling machines, slot machines, all of that there. Like, that law has changed now. It's over 18s. But they got used to that on their lunch breaks and things like that as well, Greg. And if it was tolerated, you know, it's very hard then to break that habit as you get older. You know, for
yeah,
some.
I've been talking to on this program for years now about how children are being groomed to gamble with the likes of loot boxes, opening player card packs on football games, etc. You're starting to see that come through because, as I say, it is. I must have first mentioned this 15 years ago.
Yeah. Like, any of our children who are playing video games are going to be in contact with loot boxes. That's the reality now, Greg. Mm. You know? So, like, if any of our children are playing video games, then they will have got experienced this where they will have a reward, you know, at the end of playing a certain game, or else that they will have to buy more rewards, credits, whatever the case may be. So, yeah, it's happening now in everything we do. And, you know, I just think it's great to raise awareness, Greg, and, you know, thank you for doing that this morning. Just to let people know out there that gambling is a huge problem in our local areas, you know. And
it's the hidden problem, isn't it? It really is hidden because maybe, you know, we see the impacts of alcohol or drug abuse. Maybe it's more apparent, but there's families listening to us now and, you know, the fella or the woman or whatever the makeup of it might be, the money, the pay comes in on Friday and it's gone Friday evening.
Yeah. Yes, sadly, that's the reality for a lot of homes today. In some cases, a lot of people leave their homes and go to different premises and do it. And for others, it's the silent one where they have the phone, the device in their hand, and they don't even have to get out of bed. You know, they've got access to that. And before they get up, you know, they could lose a lot of money. And you take for our young people, you know, who are into sports, they work hard at that. You know, there's so many opportunities now to go gambling, betting, watching a football game alone. And it's not that these young people, I suppose, like, they don't want to get sucked in, but they do easily now get more sucked in. And parents might think that they're there watching a game, and little do they realise what's going on their phone.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So it's just that being more aware, asking questions, you know, talking about things.
Yeah, really important. Okay, listen.
It is.
Thank you very much indeed. Any further information we can get out into the future, please be in touch with us. It really is important. Now, the 50th Donegal Sports Awards banquet will take place on Friday, the 30th of January in the Mount Errigal Hotel. Is it the 30th?
This Friday.
So today's the 28th, 29th, 30th. Of course it is, yep. And to discuss this, I'm joined in studio by Paul McDade, Secretary of the Donegal Sports Star Award. Now, Paul, we don't have to sell any tickets, right? Sometimes we're flogging tickets, not for your event, for different events.
No.
Not this time. 50 years, half a century, it's astonishing. And I think there must have been something happened in this county 50 years ago, because over the last 2 or 3 years, the amount of big things or clubs or events that have hit 50 years is really quite remarkable. Can you give us a brief history of its inception?
Well, the first event was held in the Milford Inn in 1976. It was the brainchild of my late dad, Brendan McDade, who believed at the time that there was not enough emphasis placed on the important role that sports played in our lives.
Yeah.
And that neither the government, the county council, nor the schools really relished or really valued sport at all. So my father felt that there was a need to create an awareness of sport in people's lives, and that was his motivation. So he met with his friend Harry Blaney at the time, and they come up with this idea of a Sports Star Awards, an annual Sports Star Awards event to commemorate the sporting achievements of all the sporting heroes in Donegal, and also to appreciate the work that the volunteers did in sport.
It was a great vision back then, really, to sort of understand that it's not just the people who are doing the stuff on the pitch or the track or wherever, it's those that support them. And Paul, does history give us much information as to, you know, how big it was from the get-go? Because this, or was it a slow burner that built up to something as significant as it is now?
The first event was pretty, the first of all, they had no money, so they approached the Milford Inn Bingo Committee for sponsorship. And eventually they agreed to sponsor the event to the tune of, I think it was £300 at the time, right? Mm. And that allowed them to fund get the funding for the event. So then they went and they approached a number of prominent individuals and other different sports, like Dick Duffy from Letterkenny, Patsy McGowan, there are a number of people that they got together, and they discussed about how they would go about organising this event. They eventually then agreed on a format, and then they formed the first Sports Star Committee, and there was various people involved in that. Again, I don't know if you want to name them or not, but they were all dedicated people at the time. They met regularly at our home in Remelton.
Great memories for you.
Well,
you would have been young, but
my mother would bring them in sandwiches and tea every night, and it was very exciting at the time. We were a big sporting family, so we loved the idea of the Sports Star Awards. But the first event was held in the Milford Inn, and the first guest was Ronnie Delaney, who just won a gold medal in the Melbourne Olympics, which
brilliant guest.
It was a great guest.
But also, too, you talked about recognising those behind the scenes, but also to the various levels, from the grassroots, encouraging sports participation at a very young age, right to the very top. So, again, 50 years, I'm not saying everyone was backward 50 years, don't get me wrong, but still, I think it was visionary to sort of set it up that way. So that, you know, because often things evolve into that, but, you know, they had these notions very early on.
Well, there was a lot of sporting. Sport in Donegal was vibrant at the time. There was a lot of sports. There was, I mean, for example, on the night there was, on the first Sports Star Awards night, there was the tennis, clay pigeon shoots, soccer, Gaelic football, rugby, motor rallying, boxing, cycling, handball, hurling, camogie, snooker and athletics.
It's all there.
So there was a lot of activity going on in the county, but there was no great the my father's idea was to get them all together and celebrate their achievements at the county level. And
well, very sadly, your dad, Brendan, passed away in 2002. Is that when you stepped in earnest to sort of carry the mantle?
Well, I inherited the role. I felt it an obligation to try and keep to help to keep the sports awards going.
Well, you
going.
Have almost 50% of the time they've been running, so.
Well, I tell you, we have a great committee, right? Mm. And we've had great people on the committee down through the years. There's been people that have been steadfast and committed. I just want to mention like Patrick McLaughlin from Mulford, you know Declan Kerr yourself. These people during COVID, for example, they kept it running when it was in danger.
It's not just about the big names, but of course the big names stand out, right? But I think it's the fact that everybody rubs shoulders with the big names, and there's been some great guests over the time, over the years, great guests and winners: Paul McGinley, Seamus Coleman, Mark English, Shay Given, Paddy Bonner, Dylan Brown, Oshie Knorr, Luke McAteer, Patrick McGettigan, and these are from all different sports, but we really punch above our weight, I think. And I think, to be honest, it's the likes of the Patrick McGowans that you mentioned and others that have harnessed this talent and brought it through.
Absolutely. The amount of the effort that the people have, even when I was young, there was in our own town, it was a big sports town, you had people organising local football matches, and you had people that were committed to cutting the grass, lining the pitch, you know, raising money, which is an awful job, right? But people,
it's true.
People are there are some great people that keep at it and
right. By the way, it's sold out, and it's really, really important. It's in the wonderful setting on Friday night of the Mount Errigal Hotel, but there's a lot of people going, right? There's a lot of people going, folks, and there is not. There's not an infinite amount of parking. So I know, Paul, you're really keen for people to make sure they get there on time so the event can start when it's scheduled to start. As I say, over 600 guests, right? So don't find yourself panicking and rushing. Enjoy the night and give yourself time to get a parking spot or get dropped off or whatever it might be. You're expecting, I mean, you know there's going to be big crowds, right?
Absolutely. And our special guest this year is Brian Kerr as well. And I've
he's good value.
Well, I've a personal. Actually, I'm delighted he's taking it, he's doing it, because I've got a personal relationship with him. I was actually played in one of his football teams years ago, and but he just a personal story. I got actually very ill back in 2000, right?
Right.
And I hadn't spoken to Brian Kerr for years, and Brian rang me out of the blue. And he said, I heard you weren't keeping well, he says. And I said, yeah, I'm through a bad time here. And he said, I'm coming down to see you.
Wow.
Now, that's a measure of the man.
The man, yeah. Okay, brilliant. Brian Kerr is the special guest. I presume reflecting on the 50 years, marking an amazing milestone. And, of course, the awards, the banquet, the entertainment. Get there early. Get there early, people. And have a great night. I'm dead jealous of you all. Right, okay, Paul, thanks very much indeed.
Thanks,
beaten by the buck.
Thanks, Greg. Thank you.
All right, that's Paul McDade, Secretary of the Donegal Sports Star Award, who is doing his dad proud, carrying on the fantastic work of his dad, Brendan, helped by a wonderful committee. And it takes a committee, a big committee, a dedicated committee to keep such an important part of the sports calendar on that calendar. Back tomorrow morning at 9. Have a great day, everybody.